A chemist coined the term plastics in 1907, unaware of just how significant his discovery would become. Since the start of large-scale production in the 1950s, today nearly everything around us contains plastic. And though the material is inexpensive and durable, scientists have discovered it may not be our best option. The issue? Tiny particles called microplastics.
I think we've been aware of microplastics longer than we care to admit. We understand how long, or have a guesstimate of how long, plastic particles last in the environment, that idea of recycling or throwing away. And that's where the idea that, you know, diapers take a long time to disintegrate in the environment, plastic bags take a long time, plastic bottles, they all have a timeline associated with them. And some of that is based on actual scientific degradation studies, and others are guesstimates. My concern is that those degradations really have to do with the plastic getting smaller and smaller in size until we can no longer see it, and then we consider it to be gone.
Which isn't actually the case. That's Dr. Phoebe Stapleton, assistant professor in the Department of Pharmacology and Toxicology at Rutgers University. She says that even though we may not be able to see the plastic particles, that doesn't mean they're gone. In fact, the plastic has become a smaller, more transient form that can seep into our water and float through the air. And though microplastics have only recently been discovered, Stapleton says they're nothing new.
I really think these micro nanoplastics have been around as long as the plastics have been, just watching them get smaller and smaller. As a toxicological term in particular, I think we're looking at the last decade that they've really started to be a conversation topic associated with plastics in the oceans, and then the realization that those big plastic parts and bottles and things that we see in the ocean actually have smaller and smaller fragments still around them.
Microplastics are produced in three ways. Plastic products may shed, like when you leave your water bottle in a hot car. The sun's UV rays break down part of the material and produce microplastics. Degradation also creates these particles. Incinerating plastic seems like a great way to destroy the material, but it actually causes an explosion of microplastics into the air. The third method is through companies intentionally producing the particles.
Some can be used in face creams, for example, and those were taken out of the United States also within the last 5 to 10 years. Some of those microbeads that we saw in a lot of personal care products were made out of plastic, and they were found in our waterways.
And even though the particles have been taken out of those products, Stapleton says microplastics are still all around us. They're even created when recycling plastic products.
The plastics are transitioning from one type to another. So they generally have to take that plastic water bottle and melt it down in some aspect to reformulate it into either the shopping bags that we see made out of plastic that's been recycled, or water bottles again, those kinds of ideas. But they need to be melted down, which creates its own chemical concerns, and then these plastic particles as well.
And once microplastics are created, they can travel anywhere.
Science has found plastic particles really almost everywhere we look at this point. So we found them in a variety of different food products. Some of them are highly processed food products where they might be coming out of the packaging. Others are very limited packaging as well. They're more natural. So we found them in rice. We found them in salt. We found them in aquatic sources, aquatic food sources like mussels and shrimp.
Stapleton says plastic has also been found in beer, wine, and even tap water. But they're not just invading our diet.
They've been found in major waterways. So the Great Lakes have found them. Remote rivers in Europe have found them. And then we also know that they're airborne because we're finding them in the air from urban sources. And then we're also finding them in air from rural sources, finding them in snow in the Andes and the Alps, finding them in ice in Antarctica.
So after scientists discovered microplastics in nearly all parts of our lives and environment, there was one more place to look: inside the human body.
So we're finding them in the lung tissue, both in live patients and in cadaver samples. We're also finding them in our feces and excrement, which means we've ingested them at some point. They've traveled through our system and are now being excreted.
Dr. Laura Sadowski recently published a paper seeing if these particles could fit into human lungs. She's a senior lecturer in respiratory medicine at Hull York Medical School in England. Sadowski's research, published in Science of the Total Environment, not only discovered microplastics in human lung tissue, but it revealed something she wasn't expecting.
Surprisingly, we found microplastics made it right into the depths of the lungs, so into the lower airways. We also found microplastics of a larger size than we had anticipated made it into the airways, and again, surprisingly, into the lower airways. To us, it was surprising because we thought that particles would be prevented from getting that far into the lungs, if that makes sense. So they would be removed via the lungs' natural defense systems, be it via the ciliary escalator or by being caught in the mucus and then removed via the airways' natural defense mechanisms. But also the airways get quite narrow, the lower parts of the airways. So we didn't think that those microplastic particles would be able to get that deep because of the size of those airways.
While her study successfully concluded microplastics can enter human lungs, Sadowski says more research is needed to figure out exactly how these particles are squeezing in. Other research, like Stapleton's, looks at how the particles travel once they're already inside us. Stapleton's research uses rats to see if microplastics in a pregnant mother can travel into the fetus.
So we either place the particles into the mother's lungs, or we have an inhalation facility that allows her to breathe them in naturally. And we're able to identify these plastic particles after this exposure. And we were able to find them both in the maternal tissues, the placental tissues, and fetal tissues as well. So we know that we placed them in the lung in that paper, and we were able to find them in these tissues later on.
Stapleton says some particles were also found in the brain of the fetus. Soon after her paper was published, an Italian research group released their own data in the journal Environmental International that had discovered microplastics in human placenta samples.
So these were women who had delivered. The placenta was then sent to the laboratory, and they were able to identify a variety of different micro-sized plastic particles in the human placenta. So we know that in our animal model in our laboratory, that if the mother's exposed via inhalation or a pulmonary exposure, that those particles are able to transfer past the placenta. And in our human collaborators' work, our scientists looking at human samples, they were able to find them in those human placenta as well. So we know that it's at least able to get to the placental barrier in a human pregnancy.
The researchers' next step is to identify the exact locations of the microplastics. Stapleton says there's a big difference between the particles being inside cells versus in a blood vessel between cells.
So in the cell itself may have a more likelihood to change the energy production and the metabolism of the cell. They may come in contact with the mitochondria that live within the cell. They may also come in contact with the nucleus in the cell, and that could lead to DNA changes. Whereas in between the cell, then you're looking for more of an extracellular reaction, where it may be more of an inflammatory reaction or an oxidative stress reaction. So those would be differences between kind of a general inflammation or maybe a DNA change looking at cancers and things like that.
However, these potential effects are just assumptions. Since microplastic research is relatively new, scientists still have no idea how they harm our bodies or if they do any harm at all.
We think it's important to find out long-term whether these plastic particles have an effect on the airways and human health in general. So there's still quite a lot to do to confirm that.
And Stapleton says that confirmation will take time.
Science is not a quick sport, that's for sure. It's not something that answers are immediate. Scientists are very cautious. We want to make sure that we get the answer. We want to make sure that answer can be replicated. And we want to make sure that others can find the same answer that we did. And that all leads to the reliability and the validity of our studies. We kind of question if only one person is able to find it. You kind of wonder why only one lab has been able to find this. So it's really important that that replication takes place. And that takes time to be able to replicate it.
Another reason for the wait is due to the limited amount of time scientists have been able to study plastics.
They've only been around for a little bit more than a century at this point. And so the wide use of them has been since World War II-ish. We've been using them more often in more of our day-to-day life, more of our domestic and commercial applications, construction applications. So given the grand scheme of things, they're still relatively new.
And Stapleton says there are still parts that we don't yet have the technology to even begin researching.
So we've thrown around this term of microplastics. So only recently have we been able to identify these microplastics. Have we been able to use the microscope to be able to visualize them and chemically tell the difference between a polystyrene particle or a polyethylene particle? That's all really new within the last 5 years to be able to identify them. And still the nano is just out of our reach at the moment. So they're invisible to the naked eye. They take specialized microscopes to be able to see them. And then to be able to characterize them of what type of plastic it is even more challenging. So we're right on the cusp of these technologies being developed and then applying them into a biological matrix as well. So not only being able to identify them like in a water source, for example, but then being able to identify them in one of our tissues, and even more importantly, in one of our human tissues, is still a scientific challenge at this point that many groups are working on.
Even though there aren't many answers yet, many groups around the world are working to reduce our global plastic consumption. Stapleton's own hometown in New Jersey recently banned single-use plastic bags at grocery stores. You can find more information about Dr. Phoebe Stapleton, Dr. Laura Sadowski, and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. I'm Reed Pence. Coming up next week on Radio Health Journal.
We're hopeful that the message will start to ripple out that you don't have to be in crisis before you call. As a matter of fact, it's best if you're not in crisis before you call.
Who should call the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline?
Then the tattoos that give breast cancer survivors their identity back.
The fun part is sometimes they can recreate whatever they want too. So when I have individuals come into my office, I actually have a little lookbook of different nipples that they can actually choose from.
All that and more on Radio Health Journal.
I'm Nancy Benson, host of Radio Health Journal. If you enjoy listening to Radio Health Journal, you'll also like our sister show, Viewpoints, which covers a wide array of topics from education to history to the environment. Here's a preview of what they're covering this week on Viewpoints.
The idea is simple. You put this together, and then suddenly you have a car that receives this free fuel that falls from the sky.
The increasing efficiency of solar energy. Them.
What we're seeing right now in our classrooms in far too many states is where superintendents and school board members and governors and mayors are resorting to anybody in our classroom.
The deepening nationwide teacher shortage as millions of students head back to school. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
And that's Radio Health Journal for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more. And check Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify for a library of past programs. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and information about our guests at radiohealthjournal.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.